Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. On today's program, we're going to take a look at air quality. Cache Valley's air quality has become a hot topic. Logan City Council and school district officials are pushing the county to take action. Some think the problem is being unduly politicized. Nearly everyone agrees that something needs to be done, but what? We'll talk about that on the program today. And our guests in the first part of the program include Logan City Councilman Herm Olson. Thanks for coming in. And we have with us also in studio Cache County Executive Lynn Lemon. Thanks so much.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll be talking with State Representative Rhonda Menlove. She has concerns about air quality issues and what we do in Tooele County, especially part of her district. And we'll talk with Bryce Byrd, Director of Utah Division of Air Quality, who is heavily involved in these issues. EPA, as I understand it, delegates authority to the Division of Air Quality for many of these issues. And the last segment of the show, near the end, we'll talk about Andrea, that indestructible cat we've been hearing about. We'll talk with West Valley City Community Preservation Director Lane Morris. Let me start with you, Herm Olson. As I understand it, report in the Salt Lake Tribune, a meeting in November, Logan City officials, Logan City Council officials, and school district officials in a joint meeting heard some statistics from some experts at Utah State University and the Bear River Health Department, and that has you concerned. That's why I believe you're urging the county to take some action. Tell us some of the problems you heard.
Well, thank you. We've obviously been concerned for a long time on the issue of air quality, because it's here, it's with us, it's not going away, and the issue is what to do about it. And we thought it would be valuable to get input from the Logan City School District in terms of their concerns about the health impacts of air quality on the children over which they have charge. So we did meet and had presentations from Dr. Ed Red at Bear River Health Department, Dr. Randy Martin, who is at Utah State, a few other people who are sort of the experts on Cache Valley air quality. And we all left convinced that we really do have to do something. I mean, this has been on our agenda for years and years and years. We just haven't wanted to force ourselves to create the health that we really all have to begin striving for. And we are coming up against deadlines from the Division of Air Quality and the EPA that say we have to implement something. There are a number of options available to us. None of them solve the problem, but I think through a concerted effort of implementing certain things, we can at least make progress. I mean, this is an issue that we all have to take ownership of, from starting our cars in the morning and idling no more than 30 seconds. I mean, you don't need to idle a vehicle, and the newer vehicles aren't designed to have idling time built into their efficiency. So we're all part of the problem. We all need to be part of the solution.
Let's turn to Cache County Executive Lynn Lemon. You've heard all the all the problems. We periodically have the headlines. Yeah. Worst air in the nation. That's not only Cache Valley, but sometimes the Wasatch Front gets that designation. Some days kids aren't allowed out for recess because of this. Some winters are worse than others, but we all agree we have a problem. What is the authority that the county has?
Well, the one thing that the county can do, the one thing that will, as far as this bucket of strategy, first of all, let me say we are making progress. I mean, I know that I know there are concerns, but I've been dealing with this for more than 10 years, and I don't know all the dates, but we are making progress. Our air quality, our average PM 2.5 it has gone down from an average of 12 to an average of 9. So we are making progress. Now, in fact, a number of years ago, we had really bad spikes, spikes that went over 100. Spikes, at one time, I think we had a spike that was 180. And thus, we got tagged with the worst air in the nation. I think it's unfortunate that we've been tagged with that because I think it gives people the wrong opinion. We do have a few days, a few episodic incidents where we do have bad air. And yet, in general, our air is much better than the Wasatch Front. And I'm not saying that we don't have air quality problems. I know we have air quality problems, and we need to be doing things to address those air quality problems. But we are making progress, and most of that progress is a result of technology. Cars are getting cleaner. Cars over the last 10 years are much, much cleaner than they have been. So, like I said, in fact, when I've at our Board of Health meeting the other night, Dr. Redd said the most important thing for us to do is to make sure that on a long-term basis, the air is getting better. And he says we need to be, I mean, the fact that we've reduced from an average of 12 micrograms per cubic meter on average to 9 is significant. That's a 25% increase, a reduction. And so in fact, I think the long-term effects of that is much more important than the short-term incidences where we have spikes. And because of the valley that we live in, and the situation that we're in where we're surrounded by mountains, if we get a really bad inversion, we may have cases of that. And certainly we need to put the control strategies in there that that will make a difference, but we are making progress. So that, I mean, and again, the county, the major thing that the county can do is that they will be the body that will have to make a decision as it relates to vehicle inspection testing. Mm-hmm. So
let me ask you about the kerfuffle that has happened, especially in the paper, the Herald Journal, and many in Cache Valley have read about this. The Cache County Democratic Party is pushing hard. And in your view, I've saw in the paper you feel it's become unduly partisan. They say that they feel that they need to be pushing hard because they don't see the action that they would like to see taken. Is it a difference in the view of urgency in your view?
Well, I think that what we need to do, and I know that we've had people 10 years ago that wanted us to do vehicle inspection testings before the county was declared a non-attainment area. We were seriously considering implementing a vehicle inspection program. Dr. Redd and Grant Coford went back to the EPA, and the EPA said, until you have all the facts, until you really know what you're looking for, don't do it. And so I'm certainly not opposed to that. I think that that will probably want to be one of the things that we do implement, but we need to make sure that it's the right thing to do. We've been given a basket of control strategies. The work groups have been working on a basket, and they've come up, the Utah Division of Air Quality have presented a basket of control strategies that they're recommending that we implement. Now, I'm not sure which of those will be implemented, which may not be implemented, but the thing that the county has done, and I sent a letter and I visited with the county council about this before I sent it, and I asked the State Division of Air Quality, tell us how much benefit we're going to get out of each of these control strategies. I think that that helps us to decide what we ought to do. Like Herm said, not one thing's going to solve the problem. It's going to be a combination of a number of things that need to be done, but not one thing's going to do it.
Hmm. Before I turn back to Herm Olson, Randy Martin, of course, has been referenced by Mr. Olson, USU scientist we've had on this program before. He's quoted in the Tribune as saying that he believes that a mandatory emissions testing program could reduce the PM2.5 by 8%, which is, you know, it's pretty good drop.
Okay. He believes that, and that's what we've asked the state to tell us. Mm-hmm. We want to know that. I've heard the numbers all the way from 8% to 0.5%. So mm-hmm. all I want to know is what is correct. Yeah. I want to know what the numbers are. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the things that you have to realize, and I'm sure we all realize that, but if emissions testing was going to do the problem, if it was going to resolve the problem, why does Weber and Davis and Salt Lake and Utah County, who all have emissions testing programs, why do they have, on average, worse air than we do? I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't have one. I'm just saying we need to base our decisions based on facts and based on science and based on the information that's available. And we're counting on the Utah Division of Air Quality to give us that information so that we can make intelligent decisions.
We're talking with Lynn Lemon, Cache County Executive. That's who you've just been hearing it from right there. Herm Olson is Logan City Councilman. We have these gentlemen with us for another 10 or 15 minutes. Next in is Rhonda Medlove, State Representative, and Bryce Bird, Director of the Division of Air Quality. We're talking about air quality, focus especially on northern Utah and Cache County. Back to you, Herm Olson. Do you see a difference, say, between the members of the Logan City Council and members of the Cache County Council in terms of urgency, or do you see yourselves on the same page? Would you like to see action faster than hearing from Mr. Lemon?
Well, I hope we're on the same page, because it's a component of our collective health that we have to deal with. I know that Utah County, Weber County, Davis County, Salt Lake County all recognized they have a problem and adopted an emission testing program. I guess the question really ought to be, how bad would their air quality be if they didn't have the emission testing program? I have spoken with Dr. Martin myself, and he indicates that the emission standards would reduce the 2.5 particulate matter levels anywhere from 6 to 8%, unless you then factor in that 25% of the NOx emissions come from the worst 5% of the cars, and that 48% of the VOC emissions come from the worst 10% of the cars. If you factor that into those percentage benefits, we could range anywhere from 14 to 15% reduction in 2.5 particulate matter through an emissions testing program. So what I think we have to recognize that emission testing has a financial burden that comes to the table with that issue. And I think the county correctly wants to evaluate the benefit we're going to get versus the cost that it will impose upon us and on residents of the county. But ultimately, there has to be something done. And I don't fault the county's inaction in the past years in the sense that they haven't known what are the most effective strategies. But at this point, now, today, we have to implement something. I'm looking at the headlines from the Salt Lake Tribune from just 1 year ago today, and Utah ranked worst in air quality in the entire United States, and Logan on that day, just less than a year ago, was number one of the worst air rankings. So on average, we are reducing the problem, but we still have these spikes. We can't do anything about the mountains. We can't change the geography. And there are some legitimate long-term health problems that have to be addressed. I've got a health study here by Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, which references 221 medical studies of the adverse consequences of air pollution. 221 studies. We know it's a problem. It affects our lungs. It affects our brain. It affects our hearts. It affects all of our organ systems throughout our entire body. And we know that, and we've got studies to reference it. So now, let's do something. We've got to implement something, and I think emission testing has value. I think behavioral issues, such as not idling for 15 minutes as you go into a store or wait at the school to pick up your children, has an impact. We have some education and outreach opportunities where people can simply recognize that When we have these yellow air days and red air days, they really have to make conscious efforts to drive less, make fewer trips, take shorter times that they will spend in their cars and driving, because it's a collective solution. And there isn't, I think it's a mistake to look to government to fix every one of our problems. We have to be part of the solution ourselves, or we're not going to get this done.
We're talking with Herm Olson from the Logan City Council and with Lynn Lemon, Cache County Executive, talking about air quality. You're welcome to join the conversation if you would like at 1-800-826-1495, toll-free number, 1-800-826-1495. Lynn Lemon, you've said that you're, one of the factors that you're waiting on is Division of Air Quality to get you the solid science. You're not opposed, or you don't think the council is opposed, county council in this case, to mandatory emissions testing. Is there a timeline that you could give people within which we might see?
Do you know, I mean, again, I think we've been working down this timeline for some time. In 2009, December 2009, we were officially designated as a non-attainment area. We've been working with the state for the last couple of years to develop a SIP, a state implementation plan. We're working. They've established work groups. We've gone through two of those work group sessions. We're doing another work group session in March, and then there'll be another public session in April where the public will be invited to look at what comes out of the work groups. We have to have a state implementation plan by December of 2012. So there's already a timeline established. I think that December of 2012, we will have a plan. There'll be a plan that will be submitted. And that plan could include vehicle emissions testing. It'll include a number of other control strategies. And what we really are looking for right now is we want to know what each of those control strategies will do. How much benefit are we going to get out of that? Again, I think we'll probably end up with a vehicle emissions testing program, some type of program that that will test vehicles. If you ask the general public if we ought to do this, they'd probably say no. But it is a health issue. It's a health issue that we've got to address. And so the cost to do this, now I don't know whether these costs will actually bear out, but I've actually asked the Kathleen Howell, our county assessor, to acquire the most recent numbers on number of vehicles. If we implemented an inspection program, how many vehicles would be subject to that, so that we can begin to put together maybe more intelligent numbers than we've got right now. But several years ago when we looked at this, there were about 80,000 vehicles. If it cost you say $40 per vehicle to do this, and I don't know, but that's the number that I've heard, we're looking at about $3.2 million to do it. So not that we shouldn't do it, but we need to make sure before we implement a $3.2 million fee on the citizens of our county that it makes sense to do it, that it really will get the benefit. Now, if we get 8% out of it, if there's literally an 8% reduction, I think that's pretty clear. Mm. If it's a 0.5% reduction, then I think we have to look at that. So, I think that we'll know shortly from the Division of Air Quality how much benefit they think, their scientists think, that we're going to get out of each one of those control strategies. And that will certainly be beneficial. But the timeline's been established. It was established several years ago. We're moving down that timeline. And I think we need to move down that timeline, and as we make decisions, we need to make them based on fact, and we need to make them based on science, and do what we think is best to improve the health and the air quality in the valley.
We just have a couple of minutes left with the gentleman in studio right now, Lynn Lemon, Cache County Executive, and Herm Olson, who is the Logan City Councilman. We're talking about air quality, and we'll have Rhonda Medlove, State Representative, and Bryce Byrd, Director of the Division of Air Quality, in next. Gentlemen, I'll ask you to put on your headphones. We do have a caller. And this is Jennifer in Vernal, I understand. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you. This is just something that my granddaughter and I were discussing the other day. I had to go out to Salt Lake to the airport to pick her up. And it was in a borrowed car. I don't own a car. But the traffic blew her away. She was just amazed at the traffic and everything. And the smog thing is something that she's not that used to, although we do have smog here now. But I said, take a look at the cars, and you'll notice that there, in most cases, there's one person in each one of these cars. And she said, why is that? And I said, I think it's because for a lot of people, this is the only time during the day that they get to themselves. They're in their car, they're listening to their own music, they're blocking out everything that they want to block out, and they're in their own little world. Because as soon as they get home, the kids are going to be all over them, and, you know, the spouse or, you know, whatever, there's going to be pressure there. They just came from the pressure at work. Now they're going to the pressure at home. And that is the time that they get to themselves. And I'm wondering if maybe we could educate ourselves to find another way to get, you know, personal time. Maybe we wouldn't destroy the lungs of our children. It's just a thought.
You know, one of the things that could really benefit, and one of the things that we think really has an effect, is to reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled. If we could, in addition, I mean, that's just one of the things that I think would be beneficial, because we did some studies several years ago, the Air Quality Task Force, and as we were monitoring the air, we noticed a significant drop in PM 2.5 on Sundays, where we didn't have near the number of vehicle miles traveled. So she makes a good point. If we could figure out a way to really, and Herm said, we need to do things like carpool, ride the bus, ride together, do different things so that we can redo, and just not wait for government to mandate it, but just do it. If during the winter time, during the inversions, drive less. Don't make trips that you don't need to make. Don't travel places you don't need to travel to. I mean, that can have a significant impact on air quality.
Thanks, Jennifer. Appreciate those comments. Let's go next. Our next caller is Barbara in North Logan. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Hi. Great topic, and I really appreciate all the comments, especially the statistics. But another thing to, you know, just what you're talking about is it's such a behavioral issue, and I wish we could work with the schools and the churches on Sundays to look at the no idle zones. Kids can be so powerful in some of the things that they can help their parents understand, because we forget and we fall into behaviors that are just not helping the air quality. And if we looked at the idling that goes on at schools when parents are waiting for kids and at churches on Sundays, I walk my dogs around a church, and it is unbelievable that cars sit out there for 15 or 20 minutes in parking lots. These are places where people are already gathering, and we already have all kinds of youth groups and adult groups and initiatives that we want to do with service learning projects in those places. Let's look at those places to also be a place for behavior change through those already existing programs.
Thanks for the comment, Barbara. I think Herm Olson had a comment on that.
Barbara makes an excellent point, and that's why we met, Logan City met with the Logan City School District to urge them to bring an education component to their children, to our children, but the children they teach. Because somebody said to me, well, you're wasting your time there because kids don't drive. And, you know, that's true. Kids don't drive when they're 8, 9, 10 years old. But one, they will be driving when they're 15 and 16. But more importantly, have you ever heard a committed 10-year-old telling their mother or their dad, turn off the car. We don't need to be idling like this. I mean, they can be persistent. They can change our behavior because they're committed to it. They understand it. They know bad air days because they're held in class when they can't go outside and play. Why can't we go outside and play, they ask? Because it's bad for you to be outside. So they get it. They understand the problem. They can help us get it. I think Barbara makes a good point, and I haven't thought about the notion of trying to educate our local churches, our wards, and our stakes, and getting people to just walk to church when they can instead of driving and not idling. She makes an excellent point, and I think we can make great progress in that.
We're talking about air quality, obviously, and it looks like we've hit a nerve here. We have some calls coming in. We'll take those calls. We're talking with Herm Olson, Logan City Councilman, and with Lynn Lemon, who's Cache County Executive. Let's go first to Charles in Logan. Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you to Herm Olson for bringing this to making this an issue that I think has been neglected too much. And another comment, you know, we in this valley believe in the magic of the marketplace. Let's put that to work and call up our car dealerships and say that we're interested in hybrid and plug-in hybrid vehicles, more brands and varieties of those. Those are my two comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate that. I guess the power of the marketplace. If we demand electric and hybrid vehicles, we'll get more of those. Let's go to our next caller. I believe, I believe this is Representative Menlove on the line. We'll be bringing her in next after a brief break. Gentlemen, final words on this. This is a topic. Obviously, it's on people's minds. And I wonder, to you, part of your last comment, Herm Olson, is this acceptable, that timeline that's been laid out by Lynn Lemon here, December of 2012, waiting for the Department of the Division of Air Quality?
Well, honestly, I wish we had acted 5 years ago, but we didn't. Today is today. We have to move forward. You know, somebody the other night, I introduced a resolution to urge the county council to adopt emission testing night before last, and four of the five council people seem very supportive of that notion. One comment was made, well, emission testing is just a knee-jerk reaction. Holy heck, we've been working on this for years. We know it has some benefits. It is not the solution, but we need to move forward. We need to act. This is one of the things we can do. Idling less is another thing we can do. I think we can implement a $3 per vehicle fee across the county, dedicating one of those dollars to a low-income fund so people who have no financial ability to repair these vehicles that are poisoning us can then draw upon that fund to get the repair done. It's a collective health issue for those that don't have the financial capacity, those least able, students, older people, fixed income people. If they need help, that's a fairly inexpensive way we can reach out to our neighbors and help them help ourselves. So I think those are some of the strategies we can use.
Very good. And Lynn Lemon, Cache County Executive,
well,
you get
again,
the last word.
I'm not trying to create a conflict here between Herm and I, but the fact is that 5 years ago, the Air Quality Task Force was ready to recommend that we implement a vehicle emissions testing program. And the EPA, remember, this is the Environmental Protection Agency, told Dr. Redd and Grant Coford, don't do it until you know what you're doing. Make sure that you base it on science and facts, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure, and I wish it was a short process. I wish that it was a shorter process than it is, but we're trying to go through the proper steps so that we can defend whatever position, whatever happens, whatever outcome comes out, there's a defense of it, because there are issues on both sides of this, people that are supportive, people that are not supportive, and we need to defend it. And so I think it's probably something that will happen, but it needs to happen in the proper timeline, and it needs to be based on facts, and it needs to be based on the science that the Utah Division of Air Quality is working with us on in developing the SIP. And so I understand Herm's desire to have it done more urgently than that timeline, but I think we've got to go through the process so that whatever we do, we know that we're doing the right thing and we know that it's defendable.
Very good. We'll leave it there for this segment. We've been talking with the Cache County Executive Lynn Lemon. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Herm Olson, Logan City Councilman.
Yes,
thanks.
Sir. Thank you.
We'll continue this discussion to take it statewide with the Director of the State Division of Air Quality, Bryce Byrd, and we'll also be talking with State Representative Rhonda Menlove. That conversation will follow this break.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now with new hours, open Monday through Saturday 7 until 3 and Saturday 8 until 3, offering a changing menu of French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits and serving lunch sandwiches.
Support for Utah Public Radio comes from listeners and from the Cache Valley Center for the Arts, presenting the Irish step dancing and music of Celtic Nights, January 24th and 25th at 7:30. Ticket information is at centerforthearts.us.
You're listening to Utah Public Radio. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we are talking about air quality. We've been focusing on Cache Valley, and there's been a push from members of the Logan City Council, also members of the school district in Logan, to get the county to implement some measures, including mandatory emissions testing. There are air quality problems, of course, outside of Cache Valley, and including areas such as Vernal, where we received a call from Jennifer, of course, the Wasatch Front. We're going to expand this statewide with the director of the Utah Division of Air Quality, Bryce Byrd. He joins us on the line. Thanks, Mr. Byrd, for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And I understand it that you are very much involved, your division very much involved in county such as Cache County. That's at least what County Executive Lynn Lemon told us, that they are waiting for some hard scientific evidence from you before they proceed. And there's a SIP, I've forgotten what the acronym there is, that they're waiting on will be happening by the end of this year, I guess.
Yes, with the federal EPA sets the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. And when an area violates those standards, then it becomes the responsibility of the state and local stakeholders to develop what's known as a state implementation plan, which is a new rules and regulations, a plan to bring the area back into attainment with those federal standards.
State, what is it?
Implementation plan.
Thank you. I'm having trouble with that acronym. So we're going to just be talking with Bryce Byrd. We're bringing in as well State Representative Rhonda Menlove. Thanks for joining us again on Access Utah.
Great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
We appreciate you joining us again. I know this has been a concern of yours, particularly how we implement any measures. Of course, the state legislature, I don't believe, has jurisdiction here. I guess you could implement laws here. This is mostly the EPA through the Division of Air Quality. But I know you have had concerns about how these rules are implemented, specifically with regard to how that affects business.
I have serious concern about that. We've been, meeting with the EQ representatives, as well as I've traveled to Denver to meet with EPA regional representatives, had them here in Utah. There are some designations in some of our rural counties that simply do not make sense, and they're inhibiting economic development and business expansion. Which has a direct impact on employment and then the local economies. So this is a very serious issue.
What are your concerns in specific? How would some of these rule implementation plans affect business?
Well, some of the areas designated in Box Elder and Twilla counties were designated with what we see as possibly faulty science. And I know DEQ has been working with EPA to develop a better scientific model. This is not to say we don't want to clean up the air. That's a high priority. But we want to focus our efforts on the areas where there truly are problems with air. And rural Box Elder County and rural Twilla County really are, not the serious areas of contention there. And as soon as an area of a state is placed under non-attainment, it's a deterrent to business and industry locating to that area. It also creates problems with expansion of existing businesses. And that's my primary concern. Although I'm very concerned about the clean air and making sure we have clean air, I just want to make sure we have the science right and that we're making those decisions based on evidence and not just people in Washington, D.C., or even Denver sitting in an office and guessing what might be happening here.
Bryce Bird, do you, at the Division of Air Quality, take these economic and business concerns under consideration when you're making these rules?
We do, and it's really part of the governor's initiative as well, that one of his pillars of his administration has been self-determination. And so, you know, we are making air quality improvements because it's the right thing to do. It does benefit the health, of course, of the citizens of the state of Utah. But also there is that business and economic development portion of that as well, that when an area is not meeting those federal standards, there are some mandatory requirements that come into play which do impact the permitting or approval for new business coming in, and then just also the perception as well, that as businesses are attracting new employees or new processes, attracting new businesses as well, that if an area is not meeting those federal air quality standards, that is something that they consider when they're relocating to an area. And so the governor has made this one of his priorities as part of both of his energy development plan and again, the self-determination pillar of his, to make sure that we are bringing ourselves back into the meeting these federal air quality standards and providing both a good business community and a healthy community for our citizens.
You're welcome to join this conversation. We're talking about air quality, and right now we're talking with State Representative Rhonda Medlove and with Bryce Bird, Director of the Division of Air Quality for Utah. The number is 1-800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Representative Medlove, would you be in favor of mandatory emissions testing for Box Elder and Tooele counties that's being considered in Cache County? County Executive Lynn Lemon says it's likely coming, but not after the SIP is complete. Is that something you're in favor of?
You know, that's something I think we have to study carefully. I've met with farmers and ranchers, and there's some implications on our rural agricultural industry. So I think it needs to be studied carefully before any implementation. But I think it's something. You know, as I've talked to my constituents, they're willing to look at if it's reasonable and it's carefully implemented. I talked with one of my fellow colleagues yesterday in the legislature. There will be legislation coming forward proposing an air quality task force. I'm hoping that we can focus some efforts there, possibly through that task force or other means for the legislature to start to study the implications of, you know, dealing with air quality, how we're going to handle it, and things like emissions testing would be part of the purview of that task force.
Let's get a comment from one of our listeners. This is Uriah in Garden City. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing? I've been listening to this program, and something that's amazed me, just for a while, I spent about 3 months in Peru last summer with the family on vacation and stuff. Air quality, down there, Lima has completely turned around their air quality. They've all gone to natural gas. I mean, you can go up to any gas station, fill up your car. The conversion over to natural gas for an older car is relatively inexpensive. I mean, you know, thinking about it, it was like $400 or $500. They convert it over, and you fill it up just like your gas station. You still use gas if you want. I just wondered why we can't do that here more in the U.S.
Okay, thanks for that, Uriah. I don't know, Representative Medlove or Mr. Bird, would you like to tackle that question?
I'd like to comment on that. My husband and I own a natural gas car that we bought, factory-made natural gas. We have large natural gas reserves in the state, and I believe that would be a great resource. We've had some state incentives to entice people to move to natural gas use in automobiles. You know, we are hampered by some EPA restrictions in terms of transfer of an automobile from gas to the refit. And Representative Jack Draxler ran some legislation to streamline that and make it more cost-effective. I think that's a great solution.
Let's go to our next caller. This is Michael in Logan. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning to you.
I listened to your talk show from time to time, and you know, they were talking about how to help improve the air quality in cars and everything, and implementing the $3 fee for low-income families. And I'm a low-income family myself, but anytime government gets involved and, in a sense, take away our right and say, hey, we have to do this, it turns the public against them. And anytime there's something in there that's, you know, bad for our health or bad for our family, I think the correct way to proceed and one to try would be to say, hey, we can say, hey, this is the process, this is a study we found, and this is the solution we found to correct it, and let people come forward voluntarily to help them out. Because if there is ever a serious issue, people will come together and help out one another to correct the issue and make us our lives healthier or more productive.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael, for that comment. Let's get a response. Perhaps Representative Medlove would like to tackle that one.
I think that I appreciate that comment and that approach, that this has got to be a community approach. It can't be just one sector. It can't just be government. For us to effectively deal with the air quality, it's all partners have to be involved. I think this is right. That's great.
Representative Medlove, you mentioned that there may be legislation coming in the upcoming session to address air quality board, did you say? Could you expand on that?
There will be legislation proposing a task force to study air quality issues throughout the state. The legislature would have to approve that task force and then approve funding for it. So it will have to go through an approval process, the legislative process. But I think that is a good signal that tells me that there are other legislators who see this as a high priority.
Mr. Byrd, with the Division of Air Quality, is this something that you would welcome?
It is. As you mentioned, a lot of our authority and the programs that we implement do come from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. And those come with some baggage or some constraints, such as when EPA develops a national standard, of course, it has to apply everywhere. And so some of the mandatory requirements may not make sense or even improve air quality in our area. And so it is important to get the science right and understand the issues and make sure that we're developing a plan that is both effective at improving air quality, something that is acceptable to the local communities that it impacts, and something that is something that can be implemented, you know, something that can bring down those emissions and do it in the right proportions so we actually have air quality improvement. We're kind of unique here. You know, we only have the bad air quality days a few days a year, and it is tied to these winter inversion periods and then a few days in the summertime when we have the stagnant conditions in the summertime. And as we look at the chemistry, we find that most of the particles that are in the air that we measure actually aren't emitted as particles, but they're emitted as gases, and that they form as secondary particles in the atmosphere. So understanding that atmospheric chemistry and understanding which constituents of the air pollution to control is very important in the ultimate outcome. Really, we could, kind of without this work, we could design a program or design a control strategy that would actually make conditions worse rather than better.
We're nearing the end of our time with Mr. Byrd and with the Representative Medlove. Before I let you go, Mr. Byrd, I wanted to get comment on the latest with Kennecott, as much as you can comment. Where are we with the latest? There are some groups that are suing Kennecott over some expansion there, which they believe will harm air quality. I believe the Division of Air Quality has signed off on this latest expansion. The expectation, at least from your side, is that air quality will actually improve with this. I wonder where we are, the latest.
Yeah, if I could just take a few minutes to explain. When the original limits were put on Kennecott back in the early 1990s, of course, that was done based on the technology that they had in place at that time. So the older vehicles, smaller vehicles, and the methods that they used to control dust. As automobiles and other things have improved over time, if we were locked into that time frame, of course, we wouldn't see any air quality improvement. And so what we've done with the recent evaluations, we've taken into account both the improvements in the vehicle fleet, the vehicle sizes have increased, so there's fewer trips being made, and then their ability to control emissions has improved as well. And what we changed was a limit on the material moved at the mine, which was a surrogate for all those emissions that were associated with those activities. And so our current evaluation shows that even with increased throughput, that the emissions are not increasing. where this ties in kind of with this federal state box that we live in is that as the state has moved forward at updating plans and reevaluating emissions, they have been submitted to the federal government for approval, but they have not acted on those. And so Kennecott is in a difficult situation where their requirements have changed on the state side, but have not yet changed on the federal side because EPA has not acted either to approve or disapprove those plans. And so the lawsuit that's going forward is to kind of bring that situation to light, and it may result in actually a better situation for us where EPA can actually act to approve the plans that we have developed.
And just very briefly, the PM 2.5 SIP process is going forward.
It is. We have a deadline of December 2012 to complete that work. We're currently looking at control strategies, as was mentioned in the previous segment, where we're working with local leaders and community, you know, people have an interest in this in each of the communities along the Wasatch Front and in Cache Valley. That is moving forward well, and we're expecting to have a good plan and an effective plan that we can then implement and submit to EPA here in the fall of 2012.
I'll give the last word to State Representative Rhonda Menlove. I'm interested specifically in the rural counties that you represent and where best to make that balance. We're concerned about air quality, concerned also about business. Where best to make that balance?
You know, I think if we can get the science right, and as Bryce has mentioned, you know, this is not a pervasive issue. It continues day after day after day. If we can get the science right, we can get EPA to understand the unique rural aspect of some of these counties. I think we, hopefully, we can reach a reasonable decision about how to deal with those few days when we do have poor air quality, as opposed to imposing some sort of mandatory restrictions that are inhibitors to business, industry, agriculture, and lifestyles of people that really are unnecessary because they're, you know, we're looking at, you know, and at all time, those impositions are placed on people all the time when only there are a few days where it really is an issue. So I'm hoping we'll have some reasonable discussions. We also have a litigation going forward from our from Box Elder, Twillow County, ATK, other entities who've joined together, you know, to get the attention of EPA saying, let's be reasonable about it. People are, this is not a contentious area of the state. You know, we don't want to fight with EPA, but we also want them to be reasonable and use good science.
Okay, we'll leave it there. State Representative Rhonda Menlove, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
And Bryce Bird, Director of the Utah Division of Air Quality, has been with us. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
And coming up following a brief break, we'll end the program by talking about Andrea, that indestructible cat in West Valley City that we've been hearing about. We'll be talking with Lane Morris from West Valley City coming up.
This is folk singer Michael Jonathan on the next broadcast of the Woodsongs Old Time Radio Hour. We have Eric Brace and Peter Cooper, two great songwriters, plus the Richter Oozer Duo. Music and conversation on the next broadcast of the Woodsongs Old Time Radio.
Friday night at 10 here on Utah Public Radio.
And we end the program talking about something that I think we're all talking about, the very unusual case of a cat in West Valley City under the city's euthanasia policies. She was euthanized, or so they thought, once, and she survived that, and then twice survived that again. It's had a happy ending, at least for Andrea, the cat in question. She's been adopted to a nice family. We're going to talk about this, the human interest and the policy implications, with an official from West Valley City, the Community Preservation Director, Lane Morris. Thanks for coming on with us briefly, Mr. Morris.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
So did I get the facts right? Twice it was attempted to gas Andrea. This is the normal policy for, I guess, the cats that can't be adopted out. Many cities have this. And she survived twice, using up two of her nine lives. This has hit not only Utah news, but national news. I'm sure that you've been doing many interviews on this.
I have, and actually, we're counting it as three lives because she then spent 45 minutes in a cooler.
Oh, wow.
Because we thought she was deceased.
Yeah.
Before she came back.
So I guess there's no policy. This is unprecedented. No policy in place for a cat that goes through this. But I guess officials thought, well, she survived three times. Let's adopt her out. Or did the publicity get her a home?
No, it was really the shelter employees who, you know, the least favored part of their job, the most dreaded part of their job is when they have to euthanize an animal. And our shelter is limited by size and capacity, and Andrea had been there for 37 days, and no one wanted to adopt her, and we had other animals coming in. So, you know, it was kind of it was her time to go.
Mm. And there's a picture of in the Salt Lake Tribune here, a very nice black cat. She's in a new home. This does highlight a policy that many cities have, animal control, and if you can't adopt them out, then the animals are killed. Is there any plan to change that policy in West Valley City?
There is not.
Looks like perhaps we have lost Mr. Morris, unfortunately. I guess we will leave it there. We're near the end of the program, so grateful that we had that time with Mr. Morris. West Valley City Community Preservation Director Lane Morris was with us until we lost that connection. Andrea, that cat that's gotten so much attention, was gassed twice in euthanasia in West Valley City, left in the freezer. She was discovered still alive. And as Mr. Morris said, used up three of her nine lives, and now it has been adopted out. That does bring to light some of these animal control issues, and perhaps on a future program we'll discuss those in greater depth. West Valley City, as you heard there, has no plans to change their policies. We'll keep you up to date on this story. Air quality, of course, has been our main topic, and we're trying to bring you topics on Access Utah that really hit home. If you have a suggestion for a topic for us, I'd love to hear about it at tom.williams@usu.edu, tom.williams@usu.edu. In the meantime, you can always join us on Access Utah 9 to 10, Monday through Friday, at 1-800-826-1495, or go to our website, upr.org, and get an email comment through to us. Thanks so much for joining us today for Access Utah. Join us tomorrow for Sherry Quinn with Access Utah and Science Questions. Thanks for listening.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.